Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I feel like I've been away for 3 days. Oh, wait. Yeah, sorry about Friday. Actually, sorry about Thursday. If you didn't get the news, and I tried to tweet and Facebook and pass the word along from the website. If you're ever wondering what happened to Bob, there's a lot of good ways of finding out, because I'll try to make sure that I put messages out in as many fora as possible. You can be friends with me on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter. You can go to headonradionetwork.com, which works just dandy, too, because I always try to make sure that... Anyway, what happened is I closed the show Thursday evening, and I mean minutes after the show ended Thursday evening, all hell broke loose. Not kidding. And what I mean by that is... It was about, 2 minutes after the show ended when this freak thunderstorm blew up. I mean, there were freaks falling out of the sky everywhere. No. But a freak thunderstorm really did blow up. And, first it rained. First it fogged. Then it rained. Then it hailed. And then it sleeted. And then it snowed. All in the space of about 5 minutes. It was amazing. And this thunder blew... just rolled through up here on top of the mountain, and it wouldn't quit. You know, at first you go, oh, thunder, and it's over, right? No. It was, and I thought, Jesus Christ, did the Anfo fuel depot blow up on the mountaintop removal site somewhere? Because it wouldn't stop. Honest to Pete, I have never, ever heard thunder that lasted as long as what I heard Thursday night. And like I said, it went for about 5 minutes, and right after that long peal of thunder that wouldn't end, boom! And not just, you know, boom. Listen, Marvelina, that's God getting another sinner somewhere over there. No. It landed... maybe he was... Your aim's still off! He got the pole right out at the corner of the driveway to the mansion. And you know what? The electromagnetical current did not blow in. Power barely blinked here. All the uninterruptible power supplies were happy, happy, happy. What did happen, however, is a while back, over the objections of a lot of people of goodwill... our present governor and future senator, no, he's already our senator, isn't he? Blanche Manchin, was gung-ho for Verizon to sell us out to a little fly-by-night company that thinks that a telephone system consists of several dented tomato cans and a ball of twine called Frontier. And what happened is the lightning ran through the phone line, right down to the network interface at the corner of the mansion, just, and away we went. And we were down. And we were down all the way till, 7:30, 8 o'clock Friday night. That's when things finally got fixed. We went through a lot of fixing, too. New interface box where the T1 comes into the house. And that didn't do it, so we had to go back to the network interface. That's when we found out the network interface was cooked. So that's what happened. And that's why I was gone. And I hate being gone when stuff breaks, like the suspension of Keith Olbermann. But I was, and that is now happily resolved, and Keith will be back on the air at MSNBC tomorrow night, having been given his corporate spanking.
Oh, zoot, naughty zoot.
Yeah.
Will you spank me, too?
But see, that's what happens when you work for corporate America. When you work for corporate America can spank your ass. And they did. Because, Keith, you know, it's one thing if you're Joe Scarborough and you give thousands of dollars to pig-licking candidates and have them on the show and promote them as though they were the neatest thing since sliced bread and routinely pooped ice cream. That's one thing. It's another thing also if you're, Radio Rwanda, and your whole operation exists solely to support one particular party, in this case the Republican Party. That's another thing, too. On the other hand, Democrat, liberal, let's not catch you giving any money to those dirty commies. And so it took a weekend, and you know what? 280,000, 300,000 signatures almost overnight, you know, the course of maybe 2 days before Phil Griffin, apparently some kin to Peter, heard the chanting of the folks carrying the pitchforks and torches outside the outer bailey of the MSNBC castle. And put it right. It's so much drama. But you know, I'll never have to worry about that. Because you're the only ones I work for. And that's a beautiful thing. But all of that happened while I was off the air, and I apologize for that. And then there was the weekend. And so, you know, I find myself, there are Mondays. There really are. There are Mondays where I find myself going, Jesus, can 6 o'clock hurry up and get here? And this is one of them. Oh, this is one. Oh, such a Monday. Such a Monday as we have coming here. Because you know what it is, right? And you just kind of had to know that on the Monday after the triumphant Republican landslide tsunami victory of the midterm elections of 2010, that the morons would be seeping from the cracks in the walls, like some sort of movie about, I don't know, ghosts or demons or something, just oozing out. Just it's Moron Monday on the horn. Yes, it is. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get your program. This is your program. Head on with Bob Kincaid. It's your program for telling the morons on any given Monday. It's Moron Monday on the horn. Come away from the midway. Come away from the crooked barrels of the BB guns and the heavy front-end weighted darts of the darts at the balloon. Even the pick-up the duck thing is corrupted. Come away from the midway and... All we need is your attention for nothing more than the simple contribution of $10 a month to the thrifty 250. You too can get behind the canvas wall and look at all the weirdness, sickness, and psychopathy of the right-wing morons. That's right, $10 a month contribution to the horn costs you less than 5 cents per hour. For all the labor that goes into the production of this program, less than 5 cents an hour, less than 5 cents, ladies and gentlemen, if you can imagine. We urge you to use caution when deciding whether or not to bring small children behind the curtains of Moron Monday on the horn. They will be shocked. They will be amazed. They may be sickened and throw up in mommy's purse. It is Moron Monday on the horn. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. And you really will. I got a feeling even the hills can't help now. From here on, for at least the next 2 years, and probably further, this country being this country, we'll be lucky if it's just our armpits that we're up to in morons. Because, baby, they're out of the gate. And they are running with the bit in their teeth. And you know what? It's kind of a wistful Moron Monday, I have to admit. Because we have returning to the list of Moron Monday Oh, an old friend. No, he's not. He's a turd. But an old name. A name that we had thought to have been done with. A name that we wished we had been done with. But we ain't. No. We ain't. Not by a long shot. Nope. Our first nominee this evening is Dim Leader himself, George W. Bush, who gave an exclusive interview to Matt Lauer that I guess is being broadcast tonight or something, in which he talked about various and sundry elements inside his new book, Decision Pants. You know, decision pants were what he put on every time he had to be the decider. Decision pants. No, points. Pants? Points? Some book about deciding that George got his brown and his black crayon out and wrote a few over the course of the last 2 years. I'm surprised it's as thick as it is. I'm surprised it's not a coloring book. Come on. But no. George declared, according to a New York Post, and I understand it's the New York Post, but according to a New York Post story, which you would expect to be relatively friendly to the Dim Leader, well, he explained how it was how I come to be a pro-life president and come to have a pro-life stance. It's a story about Leonard Green, who apparently got a Bogarted bootleg copy of the interview somewhere along the way on a DVD. I don't know. Who do we nominate for Moran Monday on this? George W., Or that hateful old pearl-clutching beast, his mother. God, that woman just gives me the dribblings just thinking about her. Her beautiful mind. You know, we're just afraid that all these people who are sleeping in the Astrodome after Katrina, they're going to like it so much here in Houston that we'll have to live with all these Negroes for the rest of our lives. It's just terrible. We got enough Mexicans as it is. That woman. But no, George had a conversation in which he discusses parts of his of Decision Pants with Matt Lauer. And he says, according to the story by Leonard Green, that his pro-life stance solidified... Okay, warning. I really should do this. Warning. This is one of those Bob Ruins dinner moments, okay? Just step back from the green beans. You can put the almonds in later, okay? Hold on. Because we got to get through this. His pro-life stance solidified when he was a teenager in Texas after his mother suffered a devastating miscarriage and, like I said, showed him the fetus in a jar. But sometimes when you're pulling the tooth, you can't just pull it. Yeah. Showed him the fetus in a jar. The former president said in an extraordinary interview that airs tonight. Extraordinary, extraordinarily ignorant, extraordinarily stupid. You'll notice that the only thing that extraordinary modifies is the word interview. She said to her teenage kid, "Here's the fetus. There's no question that affected me. The philosophy that we should respect life." That's when he had to drive his mother to the hospital. "I never expected to see the remains of the fetus, which she had saved in a jar to bring to the hospital. There was a human life. A little brother, sister. But the purpose of the story is not to show the evolution of a pro-life point of view. It was really to show how my mom and I developed a relationship." Sweet Jesus. You know, just do. So, to recap, George Bush became pro-life when he saw a fetus in a jar. Now, I'm not going to work on this too hard, but there are some things that one simply cannot avoid in this story. What does this say about George's relationship with that hateful old beast, his mama? Yeah, me either. Remember that George also had a sister, a baby sister. Her name was Robin. She was a couple of years younger than George. And she died of leukemia. It was a long and tormented death. Leukemia was not nearly as survivable back then as it is now. And even now, it is a diagnosis that strikes fear into the hearts of anyone who loves someone who gets the diagnosis, as well as the person who gets it. Little Robin Bush had died, and the day of the funeral, they sent George off to a neighbor's house while his mama and his daddy went and played golf. No, really. They don't even dispute this story. It's the truth. But what I find interesting is the idea that looking in the jar is what gives him allegedly, and now we all know this is a rank hypocrisy and there's not a word of truth to it, but it was seeing the jar that made him pro-life. It wasn't paying for a girlfriend's abortion later in life. It certainly wasn't murdering something approaching a million Iraqis, innocent civilians. Nope. It was when his mother held up the jar and said, "See! See! You little idiot! Now you have to drive me to the hospital!" Look what you've done! Why does a mother... Oh, really? I was almost tempted to get the mother's perspective by having Agnes in here to talk about this, but I overcame that urge. Now I'll get emails telling me I should have. You know, maybe 16 years old. Maybe 17. Why? Why? But you know what? Repiglicans do weird things. Because repiglicans are sick and weird. I personally do not believe a word of this story. Except that there's something in it's not in the character of George that makes me tend to think about believing this story. It's the character of Babs, the pearl-clutching old beast. Remember what she said when her son started the conflagration in Iraq about how she wouldn't be watching the coverage because she didn't want to see all the body bags coming home and the death counts and the who died? And why would I really want to trouble my beautiful mind with such things? She said it. And did you ever wonder why it was such a struggle to see the coffins coming home from George's war of choice? and the Pentagon putting out all that the tired horse crap about how they wanted to be sensitive to the families, when true sensitivity to the needs of the families would have been to let us all stand and honor the fallen instead of making them go to their lonely graves attended only by the likes of Fred Phelps and his Thank God for Dead Soldiers army. It was Mother. Mother! Norman? Yes, Mother? Mother. Potty trained at gunpoint, I swear. Can you just imagine your little two-year-old Georgie, and you're sitting there with Babs's hateful hot breath right in your ear? You'll sit right here on this toilet till you make number two, young man! Try, Georgie! Push! And then 16 years later, look at the fetus, George! Jesus Christ, not to excuse his war crimes, but if I had a mother like that the minute I got into the White House, where's that goddamn football? I'm blowing the world up, mother! But I don't believe this. I don't believe this. Because George is, after all, first and foremost, a liar. His entire family are liars. Also, in the course of all this talking about decision pants, he said that, I really want for my brother to run for president in 2012, but he says he won't. He's a liar. That means the signs are being printed now. No, I don't believe this because there was another story out there several years ago. And, you know, if it wasn't so sick and twisted, you would think, you would be inclined to think, well, you know what this is? This is a little bit like comedians stealing from each other. Because, you know, comedians kind of do. Dennis Leary, for instance, stole his entire career from Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. It's said that when Bill Hicks found out he was dying of pancreatic cancer, he said he wondered whether or not Dennis Leary would do that too. No, there's another story out there. It's dated Monday, April the 15th, 2005. I remember it well. It's from the Washington Post. It's one of those political puff pieces of which the Washington Post has become all too fond of running. It's headlined, and it's by Mark Leibovich. It's headlined, Father First, Senator Second. For Rick Santorum, politics could hardly get more personal. In his Senate office, on a shelf next to an autographed baseball, Senator Rick Santorum keeps a framed photo of his son, Gabriel Michael, the fourth of his seven children, named for two archangels. Gabriel Michael was born prematurely at 20 weeks on October 11th, 1996, and lived 2 hours outside the womb. Upon their son's death, Rick and Karen Santorum opted not to bring his body to a funeral home. Instead, they bundled him in a blanket and drove him to Karen's parents' home in Pittsburgh. There, they spent several hours kissing and cuddling Gabriel with his three siblings, ages 6, 4, and 1.5. They took photos, sang lullabies in his ear, and held a private mass. Yeah, I think the one who was 1.5 still hasn't quit wetting the bed over that. Here, hold your dead brother. That's okay. The fourth of seven children. You know, this is, And my God, you know, there's Marvin and what's her name, the Dimwit or Dottie or what, and Neil and Jeb and George. That's five. And then there was another and another. You know, this is, what is it with these goddamn Republicans? This is like the old Groucho Marx joke. You know, lady, why do you have seven children? Oh, I love my husband. Yeah, well, I love my cigar, but I take it out of my mouth once in a while. Hey. Now, this is that. What has happened in the tiny mind of dim leader George W. Bush is that he has conflated. He has conflated two stories. On the one hand, on the one hand, he has conflated the story of Rick Santorum, because that makes it seem like he really, really had a traumatic event, a moment that made him really value life. And he's conflated that story with something he saw a couple of years ago on Saturday Night Live. Really. I promise.
Favorite ladies to impress. It's easy to do, just follow these steps. One,
cut a hole in a box.
Two,
put your junk in that box.
Three,
make her open the box.
And that's the way you do it.
It's my dick in a box.
My dick in a box, girl.
It's my dick in a box.
Come on, tell me it didn't happen. I'm writing my autobiography and I need a good story about being pro-life. Wait, hey, I loved it Saturday night in the box. Then again, if it wasn't so heretical to watch, a good, fine, upstanding, godly Christian man, George Bush, might also have seen, that scene from Life of Brian. Where's the fetus going to gestate, Stan? You're going to keep it in a box? So, I told you, it's going to be a busy little Moran Monday. Oh, and we got more. Sweet Jesus, we got more. There's been, and I don't know if this is a Moran or a congratulations. There's been a show enough below the Mason-Dixie line, or what was that, the Manson-Dixie line, Ree Pig-Licking has actually stood up to Sarah Palin. Maybe this is a roadmap for us, for liberals, on how to stand up to the neckery among us. And then later in the program also, I've referenced Harper Lee's classic To Kill a Mockingbird a million times on this program. I've got a To Kill a Mockingbird story. And no, being as how it's Moran Monday, it's not a good story. But that's how that goes. Oh, we got, like I said, we got Morans hanging off the rafters this evening. So we'll take a little break and come back with your phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. I'm assuming that the phones work. I mean, you know, after everything we went through Thursday to Friday. Yeah, that's definitely a dial tone. Okay, yeah. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Well, the telephone is ringing. Hear that?
Preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Yeah, thanks for nothing, Bill Gates. Another case of the screwed up song library that wasn't supposed to be Brandy. But whatever. God, you know, every now and then Sting let one of the other boys put a song on a Police album, and they should, oh yeah, they hit it out of the park with Mother. God, if there's ever an honest movie made about George W., and I'm not talking about it. Well, I don't know. Did Oliver Stone use Mother for that? Because, oh, if I didn't know better, I'd swear she was the mother, Babs was the model for the Mother character in Pink Floyd's The Wall. Oh, wait, there's that one too. Now you can just hear it. That hateful little hiss in little 2-year-old Georgie's ear. Mother won't love you anymore if you don't do it, Georgie. Mother's tired of you being a filthy, filthy little boy. I know you're slow, but Georgie, you can do it for Mother. God, I'm going to have to get therapy after that. That or a beer. No, it's more... Thank you, John Fox. One of your best picks ever. As, you know, that's high praise coming from John. That's very high praise. Oh, I don't... When I stop to think about the upbringing of George W. Bush, it gives me the blind shivers. The screaming and the, Georgie, can't you do it for Mother? It's been years now, Georgie! Grabbing the pearls, that old beast. Mother wants to play golf! Mother wants to sit with Father and have cocktails at the 19th hole! Georgie! Brr. Just, yeah. No, but that's not all there is. One of the things where I screw up on this program is that I don't mention stuff enough. I want to encourage you, as I have previously, seriously. Go over to YouTube and subscribe to Horzac's channel, Horzac, Horzac. Because one of the best ways that we can, it's another one, it's not even the 5 cents an hour pitch, okay? This is how you can make the horn more visible. Because Horst Bjorngobler, I don't know, there's an umlaut or something over that O, and I don't know what the hell to do with it. But Horst has been cutting clips of shows and putting them up on his channel at YouTube, which is Horzac, Horzac. Go and subscribe to Horzac's channel and pass the clips around, folks, so that they get lots of listens or views, as the case may be. I mean, all it is a picture of the horn banner with an audio clip from the program. This is a great way to share. Horzac, Horzac, over at YouTube. This is an awesome PR opportunity. And we all would really appreciate it. I won't repeat John Fox's last comment, what he did while he was singing along with the Police and Mother. All I'll do is quote King Arthur from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Oh, shut up and go and change your armor. oh, this is going to be fun tonight. I'll leave you in it till morning, Georgie. I won't let Lupe change you. You know, all you have to do, and you know, poor Poppy with a smoking a pipe in the room, like, you know, something out of the Church of the Subgenius with his slippery. Babs, aren't you being a little hard on the boy? He's only 12. But that's not all. Oh no, there's tons of stuff out there. I mentioned the fact that there was a little lesson taught. Representative Spencer Baucus. And actually, he's not a moron. He's a moron by nature because he's a Repiglican. But this is worth paying attention to. Oh, yeah. Shall we nominate? Shall we nominate President Obama after that 60 Minutes interview last night? Did you catch that? The one where hating the government's as American as apple pie? Man, that wasn't American where I grew up. Hating the government? No. And I grew up in Alabama. You know, George Wallace standing in the schoolhouse door and everything, and, you know, segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. But by the time I got around to the first and second and, you know, elementary school grades, it was love thy government, love thy country. Do you realize what a magnificent success, if evil, a magnificently evil success the Repiglicans and all of their filthy money and all of their filthy intentions have had in this country? It's really encapsulated in that little moment right there. Because they've convinced the knuckle walkers and the mouth breathers and all the Repiglican upstanding God-fearing Christians. They've convinced them that it is possible to hate the government and love the country at the same time. And that, I submit to you, takes a lot of doing. A lot of doing. To separate, especially, you know, we're not talking about a monarchy here. We're not talking about a dictatorship. We're talking about a government that was formulated at a time when the formulation of this government was somewhat, it was considerably, it was unique. And it was formulated upon the idea of self-rule, that we didn't need a monarch, that we would literally rule ourselves. So in order to hate government, one has to hate oneself, because we the people formed this, you know. And the Repiglican Party has somehow gotten a whole bunch of people in this country to literally engage in self-hate. Have gotten people in this country to hate the government, and yet at the same time, I'm proud to be American. Marlene, you proud to be American? Oh, yeah. That's a pretty stunning accomplishment. Because it apparently has spread all the way to the President of the United States of America. I'm not going to play the clip. But in his 60 Minutes interview last night, which I caught, he said that the midterm results were all his fault, and that he had been, wait for it, too disagreeable, and that he hadn't, and that, you know, maybe he hadn't taken into account that, and this is his line, this is not crazy old Bob making something up. He said, hating the government is as American as apple pie. And it was one of those, gee, I miss my dad moments. Because bless his heart, Dad would have fallen out of his chair. Because that's not the America that my father lived in, where hating the government is as American as apple pie. But that is the stunning, never mind the numbers, never mind who lost and what incumbent, Blue Dogs and all that from last Tuesday. Never mind that. It took me back to the funeral last April, the memorial service, for the miners from Upper Big Branch. Back when the National Mining Association had put out a press release saying, President Obama has parked his tanks on the lawn of the mining industry. And within days of that, either before or after, like maybe, no, it was a day, yeah, the National Mining Association said that like a day after, President Obama came to the memorial service and literally repeated word for word the advertising slogan of the coal industry. Coal keeps the lights on. And he stood there in Beckley, West Virginia, and he said, "We've all got to remember that coal keeps the lights on." And I remember that moment because I was sitting there watching it as it happened, and I just facepalmed, just boom! He didn't, but he did. And he did the same thing last night. Hating the government is as American as apple pie.
See, I told you, Marveline, I've known all along he was a-hating the government.
How long do you think it'll be before some Citizens United money is used to turn that into a perpetual message for the last 2 years? None of the context around it, none of the mea culpa, none of the falling on his own sword that he was doing, just hating the government is as American as apple pie. With a stunning stinger or sound effect, dum-dum, you know, something from Law and Order, dum-dum, Barack Obama says hating the government is as American as apple pie. Do you want that kind of Kenyan for your president? Jesus, Barack! Do you think there's anybody in the cabinet or anywhere in the White House who has the guts to look at him and go, Jesus, Barack! Because I'm getting pretty close to thinking that we're in a place where we desperately need someone who will sit in the White House every now and then and walk up to it and just say, Jesus, Barack! Because it's pretty clear to me that nobody is. I was too disagreeable.
What?
2 years of playing kumbaya with the right wing and never has heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not democratic all day, and he was the disagreeable one? Well, blast my hide. Of all the things that I got around to testing after the big blow-up, it turns out that that's why the phones aren't ringing, because usually by this part of the program, I've got six blinking lights. The toll-free number is apparently down, Sandra informing me by email. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N, is apparently out of service. So when we come around to break time, it may be a little bit longer break than we had anticipated. While I call the fine folks at CityNet to let them know that that ain't working. Yeah, you can always reach the direct dial number, 304-658-3333, should always ring in. It's been ringing in all weekend. But, I'll be darned. But going back to what I was saying about Spencer Baucus, he is a real hardcore, sick, twisted, psychotic, sociopathic, right-wing Republican. In other words, he's just like all the rest. And he is from as red as you can get, a red state. He's from Alabama. But he did something. He did something. Shocking. Stunning. He was quoted in the Shelby County Reporter. That's a newspaper in Alabama. Shelby County Reporter and Moral Volcano and Thunderclap of Freedom. The Shelby County Reporter, Moral Volcano, and Thunderclap of Freedom. He was quoted as follows. The Senate would be Republican today except for states in which Palin endorsed candidates like Christine O'Donnell in Delaware.
Sarah Palin cost us control of the Senate.
He said Tea Party candidates did well in the U.S. House races, but in the U.S. Senate races, well, they didn't do well at all.
Sarah Palin cost us control of the Senate.
See, Caribou Barbie is a bully. And being a bully, the only thing Caribou Barbie understands is somebody getting up in her face and bullying right back. Spencer Baucus, apparently, understands that. And the reason he understands that is because he is a redneck. He is a southerner. And most of these right-wingers are bullies, and most of these right-wingers are southerners, and they do not respond well to kumbaya.
Here, I'll let you shake the tambourine, Representative Baucus. See, we are working together. Ha! Huh?
No. Because that's when Representative Baucus, being a pig-licking, takes your tambourine and breaks it over your head. Just say it. But he's shown a way, Representative Baucus has. Stand up to her, and she will back down. Look what she did when she was governor of Alaska. People started standing up to her, and she quit the job.
Oh, wait a minute. Ooh.
Man, that's like a flashback. Walls are breathing. What if Sarah Palin runs in 12 and gets Jebby to be her running mate and then quits a year into the job? Hello, President Bush. Again? Nothing, nothing is impossible under these circumstances. Nothing. Now, see, let me on the Spencer Baucus thing. Let me go back and just tell you how I expect this will go. The well-heeled, highly educated folks in the upper echelons of the Democratic Party will say,
why, look there, Muffy. The Republicans are beginning to catfight amongst one another. Do let us stay out of this nasty little internecine rift. Let us make sure that we stay out of this so that they may certainly tear themselves to little pieces. We wouldn't want to interfere.
That's what I expect. Is that the right way to go about it? Oh, hell no. The right way you go about it is you take some Democrats and you put them, and you say, you know, I don't know why they're picking on that poor woman. Look at that sexist Spencer Baucus saying it was a woman's fault. And then you put a few people in Spencer Baucus's camp.
Well, it's about time somebody spoke up to...
And then you get them here, and you hand them a ball bat, and the other side, wait a minute, and hands Mussolini a piece of chair rail.
Oh, Spencer, I think you're going to need a knife.
Oh, Mussolini, I think you're going to leave. I think you're going to need the candlestick. And the next thing you know, we're all standing around going, hmm. Colonel Mustard in the billiard room with the lead pipe. That's how you do this. God knows they've done it to us a million times if they've done it once. But, you know, but that wouldn't be...
Oh, Bob! See, that's why you're not in the upper elite echelons of the Democratic Party. That's not at all cricket. Not at all sporting. Doesn't in any wise resemble the Marquess of Queensbury rules. No, it doesn't. So, it's about 5 minutes before the hour. We should take our top of the hour break. I feel compelled to get on the line with the folks at CityNet and see if we can get the phones cooking again. Maybe I just need to reboot this thing. It might take a couple of minutes. So we will, might wind up playing more than one tune. But just stick around, because I will find, if you have to stand outside and scream and I have to stand outside and listen, we will find a way to make conversation radio keep happening. Yeah. This is America's listener-supported, emphasis on listener-supported, liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Care for the life of me. Remember a Saturday. I know they say let it be. Just don't work out that way. And the course of a lifetime runs over and over again. No, I would not give you false hope now on the strange and mournful day. But the mother and child reunion is only a motion away. Oh, little darling of mine, I just can't believe it's so. Though it seems strange to say, never been laid so low. Such a mysterious way. And the course of a lifetime runs over and over again. But I would not give you false hope on this strange and awful day. When the mother and child reunion is on.
Mother, should I trust the government?
Shelter of a mother's, there's no help for her, and it helps her on her way I was still single, and life was great. I held this job as a traveling salesman that kept me moving from state to state. Well, I'm standing on the corner of Lafayette, state of Louisiana, wondering where the city bar to go. Get a little conversation, drink a little red wine, catching in a bit of those Cajun girls dancing with Zydeco.
Mama tried to raise me better, put her feet in high tonight. That leaves
Well, it certainly was an enjoyable little musical interlude. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I didn't. It is 21 minutes past the hour. This is the Horn. It's Moore and Monday on the Horn. And you know what? I guess I get a nomination too. Because I thought that everything worked. But you know, when you have like a major takedown, so there's always something missed. I thought the phones worked. The phones don't work. Got notes in, not just from Sandra, but from Jim as well, that they're all down. I mean, they're all down. And so during the musical interlude of the last 27 minutes, I've been on the phone with tech support at CityNet, and they are excellent people. Let me tell you, they really are. You can't get tech support of this quality from your average ISP. These guys are pros. And they'll work with you till it's right. Unfortunately, what they've told me about working until we get it right is that I have to take the whole system down. And yes, doesn't that just suck? Yes, as a matter of fact, it does. So what's going to happen is I'm going to shut this off for a little bit, and I'm going to take the whole blessed system down, and then I'm going to talk with tech support some more, and then if we can get things back up and running, we will. And frankly, I hate to do this in the middle of a show, and I hope you understand, because to do it after hours or do it in the morning, there's, you know, every hour you put off is another hour you're not sure it's going to be right, and you don't know how long. In other words, fix problems when you find out you've got them. And secondarily, while it's no sweat to me to babble on for another hour and a half, God knows I can fill a Bobster for twice that long and have. That's not what this show is about. This show is about you, far more than me. And it's about your input, and it's about conversations that we all have together. That's why we call it Conversation Radio. So that takes a little, but you know what? If I get it all rebooted and they say, screw it, we can't fix the phones till morning, because then we can't. There's one looming possibility out there that gives me the blind sweats. It happened to us very early in the process, very early when the Horn first went on the air. Lightning cooked our extremely expensive telephone hybrid. But this time through, I'm pretty sure we're protected. Or were protected. I don't think it's the telephone hybrid, because if you listen, not that I'm inviting you to participate in my technical nightmare, but if you listen, you'll hear this. Yeah, that's a dial tone. But I also tried calling the numbers, and like Sandra and like Jim, I got, sorry, you lose. So we're going to try to get stuff squared away and fixed, and then with any luck at all, I'll come back and finish the program. But like I said, it's all got to go down one way or the other before I can do any such. So I will beg your indulgence and apologize, and hope that you'll still be there when I get back, assuming I get back. If it turns out that I'm not able to finish, check in with the chat room, and I'll post a note in the chat room, and if the show is a bust as well, I'll tweet it, and it'll show up on Facebook as well. So look around, and you'll find the answer. I'm sorry. God, I hate this. Someday, when everybody's actually getting paid on this operation, someday, we will have what they call in other cultures a staff. And I won't forget silly things over the course of an entire weekend, like check the phones, Bob. I'll talk to you in a little bit, okay? Stand by, please. Do not adjust your sets. This is the Horn.
listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Gosh, I feel like I've been away for 3 days. Oh, wait. Yeah, sorry about Friday. Actually, sorry about Thursday. If you didn't get the news, and I tried to tweet and Facebook and pass the word along from the website, if you're ever wondering what happened to Bob, there's a lot of good ways of finding out, because I'll try to make sure that I put messages out in as many fora as possible. You can be friends with me on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter. You can go to headonradionetwork.com, which works just dandy, too, because I always try to make sure that... Anyway, what happened is closed the show Thursday evening, and I mean minutes after the show ended Thursday evening, all hell broke loose. Not kidding. And what I mean by that is... It was about, 2 minutes after the show ended when this freak thunderstorm blew up. I mean, there were freaks falling out of the sky everywhere. No. But a freak thunderstorm really did blow up. And, let's see, first it rained. First it fogged. Then it rained. Then it hailed. And then it sleeted. And then it snowed. All in the space of about 5 minutes. It was amazing. And this thunder blew... just rolled through up here on top of the mountain, and it wouldn't quit. You know, at first you go, oh, thunder, boom, boom, and it's over, right? No. It was boom, 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 and I thought, Jesus Christ, did the Anfo fuel depot blow up on the mountaintop removal site somewhere? Because it wouldn't stop. I, honest to Pete, I have never, ever heard thunder that lasted as long as what I heard Thursday night. And like I said, it went for about 5 minutes, and right after that long peal of thunder that wouldn't end, boom! And not just, you know, boom. Listen, Marvelina, that's God getting another sinner somewhere over there. No. It landed... maybe he was... Your aim's still off! He got the pole right out at the corner of the driveway to the mansion. And you know what? The electromagnetical current did not blow in. No, the power barely blinked here. All the uninterruptible power supplies were happy, happy, happy. What did happen, however, is a while back, over the objections of a lot of people of goodwill, our present governor and future senator, no, he's already our senator, isn't he? Blanche Manchin, was gung-ho for Verizon to sell us out to a little fly-by-night company that thinks that a telephone system consists of several dented tomato cans and a ball of twine called Frontier. And what happened is the lightning ran through the phone line, right down to the network interface at the corner of the mansion, just, and away we went. And we were down. And we were down all the way till, 7:30, 8 o'clock Friday night. That's when things finally got fixed. We went through a lot of fixing, too. New interface box where the T1 comes into the house. And that didn't do it, so we had to go back to the network interface. That's when we found out the network interface was cooked. So that's what happened. And that's why I was gone.
And I hate being gone when stuff breaks, like the suspension of Keith Olbermann. But I was, and that is now happily resolved, and Keith will be back on the air at MSNBC tomorrow night, having been given his corporate spanking.
Oh, zoot, naughty zoot.
Yeah.
Will you spank me too?
But see, that's what happens when you work for corporate America. When you work for corporate America can spank your ass. And they did. Because, Keith, you know, it was one thing if you're Joe Scarborough and you give thousands of dollars to Piglick and candidates and have them on the show and promote them as though they were the neatest thing since sliced bread and routinely pooped ice cream. That's one thing. It's another thing also if you're, Radio Rwanda, and your whole operation exists solely to support one particular party, in this case the Republican Party. That's another thing, too. On the other hand, Democrat, liberal, let's not catch you giving any money to those dirty commies. And so it took a weekend. And you know what? 280,000, 300,000 signatures almost overnight, you know, the course of maybe 2 days before Phil Griffin, apparently some kin to Peter, heard the chanting of the folks carrying the pitchforks and torches outside the outer bailey of the MSNBC castle. And put it right. It's so much drama. But you know, I'll never have to worry about that. Because you're the only ones I work for. And that's a beautiful thing. But all that happened while I was off the air, and I apologize for that. And then there was the weekend. And so, you know, I find myself, there are Mondays. There really are. There are Mondays where I find myself going, Jesus, can 6 o'clock hurry up and get here? And this is one of them. Such a Monday. Such a Monday as we have coming here. Because you know what it is, right? And you just kind of had to know that on the Monday after the triumphant Republican landslide tsunami victory of the midterm elections of 2010, that the morons would be seeping from the cracks in the walls, like some sort of movie about, I don't know, ghosts or demons or something, just oozing out. Just more. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes, it is. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get your program. This is your program. Head on with Bob Kincaid. It's your program for telling the morons on any given Monday. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Come away from the midway. Come away from the crooked barrels of the BB guns and the heavy front-end weighted darts of the darts at the balloon. Even the pick-up the duck thing is corrupted. Come away from the midway and... All we need is your attention for nothing more than the simple contribution of $10 a month to the thrifty 250. You too can get behind the canvas wall and look at all the weirdness, sickness, and psychopathy of the right-wing morons. That's right, $10 a month contribution to the Horn costs you less than 5 cents per hour. For all the labor that goes into the production of this program, less than 5 cents an hour, less than 5 cents, ladies and gentlemen, if you can imagine. We urge you to use caution when deciding whether or not to bring small children behind the curtains of Moran Monday on the Horn. They will be shocked. They will be amazed. They may be sickened and throw up in mommy's purse. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. And you really will. I got a feeling even the hills can't help now. From here on, for at least the next 2 years, and probably further, this country being this country, we'll be lucky if it's just our armpits that we're up to in morans. Because, baby, they're out of the gate. And they are running with the bit in their teeth. And you know what? It's kind of a wistful Moran Monday, I have to admit. Because we have returning to the list of Moran Monday
Oh, an old friend. No, he's not. He's a turd. But an old name. A name that we had thought to have been done with. A name that we wished we had been done with. But we ain't. No. We ain't. Not by a long shot. Nope. Our first nominee this evening is Dim Leader himself, George W. Bush, who gave an exclusive interview to Matt Lauer that I guess is being broadcast tonight or something, in which he talked about various and sundry elements inside his new book, Decision Pants. You know, decision pants were what he put on every time he had to be the decider. Decision pants. No, points. Pants? Points? Some book about deciding that George got his brown and his black crayon out and wrote a few over the course of the last 2 years. I'm surprised it's as thick as it is. I'm surprised it's not a coloring book. Come on. But no. George declared, according to a New York Post, and I understand it's the New York Post, but according to a New York Post story, which you would expect to be relatively friendly to Dim Leader, well, he explained how it was how I come to be a pro-life president and come to have a pro-life stance. It's a story about Leonard Green, who apparently got a Bogarted bootleg copy of the interview somewhere along the way on a DVD. I don't know. Who do we nominate for Moran Monday on this? George W., Or that hateful old pearl-clutching beast, his mother. God, that woman just gives me the dribblings just thinking about her. Her beautiful mind. You know, we're just afraid that all these people who are sleeping in the Astrodome after Katrina, they're going to like it so much here in Houston that we'll have to live with all these Negroes for the rest of our lives. It's just terrible. We got enough Mexicans as it is. But no, George had a conversation in which he discusses parts of his of Decision Pants with Matt Lauer. And he says, according to the story by Leonard Green, that his pro-life stance solidified... Okay, warning. I really should do this. Warning. This is one of those Bob Ruins dinner moments, okay? Just step back from the green beans. You can put the almonds in later, okay? Hold on. Because we got to get through this. His pro-life stance solidified when he was a teenager in Texas, after his mother suffered a devastating miscarriage and, like I said, showed him the fetus in a jar. But sometimes when you're pulling the tooth, you can't just pull it. Yeah. Showed him the fetus in a jar. The former president said in an extraordinary interview that airs tonight. Extraordinary, extraordinarily ignorant, extraordinarily stupid. You'll notice that the only thing that extraordinary modifies is the word interview. She said to her teenage kid, "Here's the fetus. There's no question that affected me. A philosophy that we should respect life." That's when he had to drive his mother to the hospital. "I never expected to see the remains of the fetus, which she had saved in a jar to bring to the hospital. There was a human life. A little brother or sister. But the purpose of the story is not to show the evolution of a pro-life point of view. It was really to show how my mom and I developed a relationship." Sweet Jesus. You know, just do. So, to recap, George Bush became pro-life when he saw a fetus in a jar. Now, I'm not going to work on this too hard, but there are some things that one simply cannot avoid in this story. What does this say about George's relationship with that hateful old beast, his mama? Yeah, me either. Remember that George also had a sister, a baby sister. Her name was Robin. She was a couple of years younger than George. And she died of leukemia. It was a long and tormented death. Leukemia was not nearly as survivable back then as it is now. And even now, it is a diagnosis that strikes fear into the hearts of anyone who loves someone who gets the diagnosis, as well as the person who gets it. Little Robin Bush had died, and the day of the funeral, they sent George off to a neighbor's house while his mama and his daddy went and played golf. No, really. They don't even dispute this story. It's the truth. But what I find interesting is the idea that looking in the jar is what gives him allegedly, and now we all know this is a rank hypocrisy and there's not a word of truth to it, but it was seeing the jar that made him pro-life. It wasn't paying for a girlfriend's abortion later in life. It certainly wasn't murdering something approaching a million Iraqis, innocent civilians. Nope. It was when his mother held up the jar and said, "See! See! You little idiot! Now you have to drive me to the hospital! Look what you've done!" Why does a mother... I was almost tempted to get the mother's perspective by having Agnes in here to talk about this, but I overcame that urge. Now I'll get emails telling me I should have. You know, maybe 16 years old. Maybe 17. Why? Why? But you know what? Repiglicans do weird things. Because repiglicans are sick and weird. I personally do not believe a word of this story. Except there's something in the... It's not in the character of George that makes me tend to think about believing this story. It's the character of Babs, the pearl-clutching old beast. Remember what she said when her son started the conflagration in Iraq about how she wouldn't be watching the coverage because she didn't want to see all the body bags coming home, the death counts, and the who died, and why would I really want to trouble my beautiful mind with such things? She said it. And did you ever wonder why it was such a struggle to see the coffins coming home from George's war of choice?
and the Pentagon putting out all that the tired horse crap about how they wanted to be sensitive to the families, when true sensitivity to the needs of the families would have been to let us all stand and honor the fallen instead of making them go to their lonely graves attended only by the likes of Fred Phelps and his Thank God for Dead Soldiers army. It was Mother. Mother! Norman? Yes, Mother! Mother. Potty trained at gunpoint, I swear. Can you just imagine your little two-year-old Georgie, and you're sitting there with Babs's hateful hot breath right in your ear? You'll sit right here on this toilet till you make number two, young man! Try, Georgie! Push! And then 16 years later, look at the fetus, George! Jesus Christ, not to excuse his war crimes, but if I had a mother like that the minute I got into the White House, where's that goddamn football? I'm blowing the world up, Mother! But I don't believe this. I don't believe this. Because George is, after all, first and foremost, a liar. His entire family are liars. Also, in the course of all this talking about decision pants, he said that, I really want for my brother to run for president in 2012, but he says he won't. He's a liar. That means the signs are being printed now. No, I don't believe this because there was another story out there several years ago. And, you know, if it wasn't so sick and twisted, you would think, you would be inclined to think, well, you know what this is? This is a little bit like comedians stealing from each other. Because, you know, comedians kind of do. Dennis Leary, for instance, stole his entire career from Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. It's said that when Bill Hicks found out he was dying of pancreatic cancer, he said he wondered whether or not Dennis Leary would do that too. Now, there's another story out there. It's dated Monday, April the 15th, 2005. I remember it well. It's from the Washington Post. It's one of those political puff pieces of which the Washington Post has become all too fond of running. It's headlined, and it's by Mark Leibovich. It's headlined, Father First, Senator Second. For Rick Santorum, politics could hardly get more personal. In his Senate office, on a shelf next to an autographed baseball, Senator Rick Santorum keeps a framed photo of his son, Gabriel Michael, the fourth of his seven children, named for two archangels. Gabriel Michael was born prematurely at 20 weeks on October 11th, 1996, and lived 2 hours outside the womb. Upon their son's death, Rick and Karen Santorum opted not to bring his body to a funeral home. Instead, they bundled him in a blanket and drove him to Karen's parents' home in Pittsburgh. There, they spent several hours kissing and cuddling Gabriel with his three siblings, ages 6, 4, and 1.5. They took photos, sang lullabies in his ear, and held a private mass. Yeah, I think the one who was 1.5 still hasn't quit wetting the bed over that. Here, hold your dead brother. That's okay. The fourth of seven children. You know,
And my God, you know, there's Marvin and Dottie, or what, and Neil and Jeb and George. That's five. And then there was another. You know, this is, what is it with these goddamn Republicans? This is like the old Groucho Marx joke. You know, lady, why do you have seven children? Well, I love my husband. Yeah, well, I love my cigar, but I take it out of my mouth once in a while. Lee. Now, this is that. What has happened? What has happened in the tiny mind of dim leader George W. Bush is that he has conflated. He has conflated two stories. On the one hand, he has conflated the story of Rick Santorum, because that makes it seem like he really, really had a traumatic moment that made him really value life. And he's conflated that story with something he saw a couple of years ago on Saturday Night Live. Really. I promise.
Ladies to impress, it's easy to do, just follow these steps. One,
cut a hole in a box.
Two,
put your junk in that box.
Three,
make her open the box.
And that's the way you do it, it's my dick in a box.
My dick in a box, boy.
It's my dick in a box.
My dick in a box, boy.
Christmas.
Come on, tell me it didn't happen. Hey, I'm writing my autobiography, and I need a good story about being pro-life. Wait, hey, I loved it Saturday night in the box. Then again, if it wasn't so heretical to watch, a good, fine, upstanding, godly Christian man, George Bush, might also have seen, that scene from Life of Brian. Where's the fetus going to gestate, Stan? You're going to keep it in a box? So, I told you, it's going to be a busy little Moran Monday. Oh, and we got more. Sweet Jesus, we got more. There's been, and I don't know if this is a Moran or a congratulations, there's been a show enough below the Mason-Dixie line, or what was that, the Manson-Dixie line, Ree Piglickin has actually stood up to Sarah Palin. Maybe this is a roadmap for us, for liberals, on how to stand up to the neckery among us. And then later in the program also, I've referenced to Harper Lee's classic To Kill a Mockingbird a million times on this program. I've got a To Kill a Mockingbird story. And no, being as how it's Moran Monday, it's not a good story. But that's how that goes. Oh, we got, like I said, we got Morans hanging off the rafters this evening. So we'll take a little break and come back with your phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. I'm assuming that the phones work. I mean, you know, after everything we went through Thursday to Friday. Yeah, that's definitely a dial tone. Okay, yeah. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.